heresis, the Greek word for heresy, meant getting off the tracks and going your own way. And boy, that is our culture.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder America is sort of the Costco of heresy that we export around the world, because the very thing we celebrate in our culture is going your own way.
Individualism.
There's so much pride in being able to say, oh, I thought of this on my own. I'm an individual. This is who I am. This is my truth. This is how I see it. There's a lot of pride in that right now.
What does it mean to be a disciple of Jesus Christ? If you visit your local Christian bookstore, you'll find literally hundreds of books in the Christian Living section that encourage us to follow a number of quick and easy steps in order to become a better you. But is this what discipleship boils down to? A mere self-improvement project? In our view, real discipleship is about becoming more and more conformed to the image of Christ by the disciplines that He ordained. Folks, your donations help to bring this Christ-centered message to others, both here in the States and around the world. With the end of our fiscal year coming at the end of June, we really need your help now. For your gift of $100 or more, we'll send you a special USB stick loaded with 39 White Horse Inn episodes and Modern Reformation articles on the topic of sustainable discipleship. This is a brand new compilation of some of the richest resources we've ever produced on this topic from over the past 25 years. And we're really excited to make that available to you as a special gift. Just head to our website, whitehorseinn.org/donate. That's whitehorseinn.org/donate. Or if you prefer to call, you can call us toll free at 1-800-890-7556. That's 1-800-890-7556. Thanks for your support.
5 centuries ago, in taverns and public houses across Europe, the masses would gather for discussion and debate over the latest ideas sweeping the land. From one such meeting place, a small Cambridge inn called the White Horse, the Reformation came to the English-speaking world. Carrying on the tradition, welcome to the White Horse Inn.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the White Horse Inn. As we've seen, starting this series on the importance of creeds and confessions, whether we like it or not, we can't get away from dogma. Everyone has a creed, a set of beliefs, doctrines. Even a person who says no creed but Christ still has a basic way of thinking about the faith that directs the way that person approaches the Bible and the Christian life. Even if they say, I've accepted Jesus into my heart and made him Lord of my life, is a sort of personal creed. The question is whether our basic assumptions about God or Jesus or the nature of our salvation are accurate summaries of the Bible's teaching or not. So, what is orthodoxy and how does it relate to heresy? How do we define these guardrails and where did the guardrails come from? In this program, we're going to be looking at heresy and orthodoxy with Adriel Sanchez, pastor of North Park Presbyterian Church in the San Diego, California area. Jessica Thompson is with us again, author of Exploring Grace Together. Jessica, it's great to have you back.
Thanks.
And Michael Brown, pastor of Christ United Reformed Church in Santee, California. I'm Mike Horton. I teach at Westminster Seminary, California. First of all, what is orthodoxy? And I guess also, what is then heresy?
When I think about heresy, I'm reminded of what Peter said in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 1, where he said, false prophets also arose among the people, just as there will be false teachers among you who will secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the master who bought them, bringing upon themselves swift destruction. And many will follow their sensuality, and because of them the way of truth will be blasphemed. Orthodoxy is right teaching or worship. It's the antidote to false doctrine, the stuff that leads us to sensuality and sin. And throughout the Bible, Paul, for example, when he talks about the works of the flesh, he includes things like heresy, Galatians chapter 5, verse 20. Often when that word is used in the New Testament, it's used in the context of divisions or sects that are created that are not a part of the mainstream of belief. And so there's a sense in which heresy is something that severs us from the mainstream life of the truth, the gospel.
Yeah, ortho, we think of that word, it means straight, essentially. And so when we think of orthodoxy, we're thinking of straight teaching. which is essentially why we have creeds and confessions in the church. Creeds are like railroad tracks that keep the church going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And an analogy that helps us think about staying straight and not veering off into false teaching. Heresy means false teaching. And I think it's important we define that, because a lot of times that word gets tossed around. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's heresy. This person's a heretic, et cetera.
Very loose. Yeah.
Technically, nothing is heresy unless there's been an ecclesiastical body that has examined that teaching and condemned it. And same thing with a heretic. I think we have to be careful not to say this guy's a heretic,
personal
that guy's a heretic.
Excommunications.
Yeah.
And heresis, the Greek word for heresy, actually meant going your own way. And so it's interesting that that was the word that was chosen early on, even in the New Testament, for straying from orthodoxy, getting off the tracks and going your own way. And boy, that is our culture.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder America is sort of the warehouse, the Costco of heresy that we export around the world, because the very thing we celebrate in our culture is going your own way.
Individualism, while you're singing the Fleetwood Mac song.
Yeah. And in the Christian faith, actually going your own way is considered sin.
Right.
Right. I think there's so much pride right now in being able to be like a new thinker. There's so much pride in being able to say, oh, I thought of this on my own. I'm an individual. This is who I am. This is my truth. This is how I see it. There's a lot of pride in that right now.
We have to respect Satan. We have to take him seriously. I mean, he is clever, but not take him too seriously, because he's not very creative. Only God can create. Satan distorts. He destroys. He tears down. He corrupts. He twists. And there are like five heresies he's capable of. But he does them over and over. And if ain't broke, don't fix it.
He repackages it.
And here's the thing. All of those heresies got wheeled out in the first five centuries of the church. That's when we got our creeds. So when your Mormon friends come to the door and tell you, well, this was all invented in 325 and, you know, this isn't really biblical. Actually, the fact that it took that long to come up with the creeds is in its favor.
That's a good point, right.
Because it had to summarize the Bible's teaching and the teaching that the church had proclaimed all along against heresy. After having gone through those five combinations that we have seen for the last 2,000 years. Honestly, we haven't seen more than these heresies crop up again. There are no new heresies. It's just different combinations of these same heresies. And that's why the creeds are so useful, because they went through those five heresies and gave us a summary, all bloodied and bruised. You know, they had the scars to show, the scars of battle. Pastors, friends of theirs, people who really, quote-unquote, loved the Lord, and yet they had the wrong interpretation of the Bible about Christ, about the Trinity, they had to part ways and say, I'm sorry, you're not my brother. Those were difficult times. Let's take advantage. If we're going through the same heresies for the last 2,000 years, why don't we take advantage of the fact that the church recognize that in the first five centuries and learn from the mistakes that they rejected.
Right. And when we think of those councils that are applying the things that the New Testament told them to do, at Ephesus, Nicaea, Constantinople in the fourth and fifth centuries, we think of those passages from the apostles that say things like when John said, beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God. Or you think of Paul when he was at Miletus and he calls for the Ephesian elders, the elders in the church there at Ephesus, and he gives that beautiful farewell speech in Acts chapter 20, and he says, fierce wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock, speaking twisted things to draw away the disciples. Well, we see those things playing out, don't we, in the first few centuries of the church. As you said, Mike, as Satan's wheeling out the heresies, the words of the apostles are right there being applied as the church is responding and saying, no, we need to examine this. We need to see where are the lines of orthodoxy, and let's see whether or not this is heresy, false teaching.
Yeah, even Peter says, some things Paul writes are difficult. He doesn't say that they are obscure or certainly not that they're erroneous. He says that the unstable and untaught distort as they do the rest of the scriptures to their own destruction. And that's why you have to have faithful teaching because, you know, it's not because the Bible is inherently unclear. We are all fallible. I distort like Satan does. I'm sorry that that's true of me. I don't, as a regenerate Christian, set out to do that. I don't set out to pervert, as Satan does, the faith. But I don't know when I'm doing it even. And I have to have other people come to me and say, Mike, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? We need each other. And we don't just need each other as in the people who are now living. We need our brothers and sisters down through the ages. We need the whole church for this. This is going to be tough.
Yeah, that reminds me of the famous quote from Vincent of Lerins in the 5th century who said, care must especially be had that that be held which was believed everywhere, always, and by all. That's what we're looking for in terms of Orthodox is what has the church been saying for the centuries? You know, if you come up with some doctrine on your own, if you're off on your own, you know, going back to that definition of heresy, chances are you're going to cause trouble for yourself and for whoever it is that you're trying to instruct.
Yeah. Right.
This is one of the reasons why in the tradition that I'm in, we have as a practice the ministers, the elders, and the deacons sign a form of subscription that says, here are the boundaries. You're going to hold to the creeds and our confessions. And if you should ever come to the conclusion personally that, hey, I can't agree with these things, you're going to go and inform the elders. But that way, the people in the church know there are some boundaries.
Yeah.
That, you know, Reverend Brown up there isn't going to come up with his own interpretation that's going to be in conflict with the things that we confess. He's free to do that, but he's probably going to be in error if he does because we have something much bigger than Reverend Brown and his own study that helps us and guides us into truth.
And just think of analogies. For example, let's say you have a surgeon. He's got this kind of new operation and he doesn't have a track record. He doesn't really keep records of how they go.
But he feels really good about it.
He feels really – yeah. And he has a positive, upbeat attitude. He isn't a member of the American Medical Association. You'd be foolish to go under the knife with a guy like that. You want a doctor who submits himself or herself to a body of colleagues who are peers, who are trained, and can discipline them if they step outside of the guidelines of best practices in the field of medicine. Now, as a patient, that should be very comforting. Isn't our everlasting salvation more important than adding 10 more years to our life here and now?
Definitely, and I think that's such a great analogy that you give there, Mike. We also don't want a doctor who's just going to tell us everything is fine when we're dying.
Yeah. Right.
And you know, isn't that what God was rebuking the leaders in Israel for throughout the Old Testament? You know, you say peace, peace, when there is no peace.
Yeah.
So certainly we need to have teachers that are going to speak the truth that has been proclaimed throughout the ages to us and call us out when we're sick and dying.
Yeah. And the problem is that nowadays we tend to look for our pastors in a different way than we would look for our doctors or an attorney or anybody else. We just want someone who gives us the warm fuzzies. Does he have that glowing? And it's nice to have bedside manner as a doctor. But you know what? I want to know that this guy is peer reviewed.
Yeah.
I want to know that people who have gone under his knife have come out alive. I want to know where he went to school.
Do you really believe this is about heaven and hell? I mean, really? Do you really believe that it is appointed for man once to die and then comes the judgment? If we want a pastor who just dresses the wound lightly as though it were not serious, saying peace, peace, when there is no peace, then we don't really believe in heaven and hell. Basically, we've lost all consciousness of there being a God outside of us.
That's right.
I think we're addicted to new. I think we're addicted as a society to cutting edge. And probably that's how it's always been, and which is why heresy thrives.
Yeah.
We think that new is exciting, like somehow we equate new with exciting. But what's exciting is the old story.
Yeah.
What's exciting is the gospel, the good news of what Christ has done for us, that has been tested and tried and is true. It was true then. It's true now. Mm-hmm. That's what's exciting, not something that pops up and is amazing for probably 6 months and then all of a sudden falls away. And then something new pops up and is amazing for 6 months mm-hmm. and falls away, but something that has stood the test mm-hmm. of time and is faithful.
Yeah, to really follow the apostles' exhortation to be rooted
right.
and deeply grounded versus what we often see here in the California desert, tumbleweeds.
Mm-hmm.
They have no roots. They're just dried up ball of waste going across the road. That is exactly what Paul means when he says no longer be tossed back and forth with every wind of doctrine. You have a tree and it can withstand a hailstorm, but a tumbleweed can just get a good gust and it goes sailing. Well, you talk to a lot of people who aren't going to church anymore, who are part of this category of nuns, no religion, and you ask them about their story, and you know, at least in my experience, time and time again, they've given me a background similar to the one I grew up in. They talk about going to, very often, an evangelical Protestant church or a Catholic church, conservative background, growing up in it and just not being deeply grounded in it, not deeply rooted. And I think of the analogy that the late Dr. Walter Martin used to give, that the best way, people tell you in the FBI, the best way to tell a counterfeit dollar is to know the real one really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's
so familiar with the genuine article
right.
that mm-hmm. when you come across a counterfeit, it immediately stands out.
Exactly.
Right. And it's also important, I think, that you know we understand that these creeds and confessions that we confess – They not only protect us from heresy, but they also protect our unity in the truth.
Right.
They keep us united. I think of you know how Paul says in Ephesians 4 when he tells us to be eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. The very next thing he says is a little creed. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called in the one hope that belongs to your call, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all. He states those seven articles of the Christian faith in what many New Testament scholars believe was a creed that new converts recited just before they were baptized and received visibly into the church. And so the point that the apostle makes is very clear. There's no true unity apart from unity in the truth.
Yeah, and that's what really binds us.
Right.
That's, you know, when people say no creed but the Bible, what's really interesting is they end up having a default creed that is their basis for unity, but it's not Trinitarian. It is pre-tribulational rapture.
Mm-hmm. Or political affiliations.
Or political mm-hmm. affiliations. There has to be a center of gravity. And it's sort of like if you don't have a lawyer, the court will appoint one for you. If you don't have a Catholic, little c there, not Roman Catholic, a Catholic Orthodox magnet as a center, then you're just going to invent another magnet and mm-hmm. you're going to cause right. disunity in the church,
right.
drawing people away to your circle.
Something has to bind you together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it might be the wrong thing. And that's where creeds and confessions help us.
Mike, in all that vast time that you have left in your week, Coach Little League, you're still doing it?
I am. I just got my new team. I'm excited.
Awesome. I want to ask you what would happen if you told an outfielder to tackle the guy who's trying to steal second base.
That'd be exciting.
Yeah. I want to see that kind of baseball.
Yeah, I'd get ejected, that's for sure. There's a few people in our community who'd probably like to eject me.
Maybe then you'd be encouraged to coach a football team.
Right. Yeah, there's rules, I think, is the point you're making. And yeah, you know, sports is a great analogy. It's one of the things I love about baseball is that it's no longer baseball if it's not three strikes, four balls. If there's rules. I just went to a rules clinic last night. It was 3 hours long for all the coaches and umpires. And it's fantastic. I mean, this is what makes baseball baseball. Now, the designated hitter, that's heresy. We need to be clear about that. The American League has been in heresy
novelty.
For a long time. And so we're waiting for them to come back to the faith.
Well, along those lines, when does a person cross over from orthodoxy into heresy? This is a difficult question to answer.
I mean, if we keep the baseball analogy, I mean, if I am to be most charitable, I would say that, you know, in one sense, you know, we think of Major League Baseball in a sense like the Christian faith. And then you have these different traditions. And once you have the American League and the National League, that may have some different practices. And so in one league, you have something like the designated hitter, which I particularly don't like. But all right, fine. It's within the bounds of Major League Baseball. But if you did something like you were pointing out, tackling the base runner from first to second, that would be very exciting.
Game.
Yeah, that'd be very fun. But clearly, you have gone beyond the bounds. You have transgressed the bounds. There are rules that help us to play the game. We have to know the difference between obstruction and interference. And sometimes these things, that's what makes the game really exciting. When you think of the Cardinals and the Red Sox, and they're in the World Series, and they ended the game on an obstruction call, that is really where you see the rules coming into play and making all the difference between a win or a loss. There is something similar when it comes to the Christian faith, that there are boundaries. We can't simply go with what is it that I have experienced personally.
Jesus is God or he's not God. There's not a third
Jesus,
option.
Yeah, right. He is either God or he is not God. I always bring it back to the resurrection. He was either raised from the dead or he was not. If he was not raised from the dead, then there's no point in us even being a Christian. If he was raised from the dead, well, then we need to know the things that he has said. We need to look at what is the high priorities of the Christian faith that have been revealed in Scripture. Mm-hmm. We need to know where the boundaries mm-hmm. are and not go beyond that, because if we go beyond that, then we have gone into a different religion.
Can I take the baseball analogy even further? I love baseball, by the way.
We could talk about baseball.
Okay, that sounds good to me. Even in the National League and American League, you have teams that have different philosophies on how to play the game.
Right.
Right? So we still have the rules, and they still guide us, but where the Padres rule is, I just want to lose all the time.
Oh, man.
I love the Padres. They
it's
break
a theology
my heart.
Of the cross,
listen, it is.
Jessica.
They don't love me back. Where the Padres might have a theology of, let's just say, bringing in old players and hoping that they rehab and somehow they're good. Some other team might have a theology of or a philosophy of bringing up young players and nurturing them, right? So
right.
Neither one of those is necessarily right or wrong. They still fall in the bounds, but they play the game differently,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right. They abide by the rules.
Right. You abide by the rules. You can play small ball or you can get the home run hitters, mm-hmm. which I feel like is important that we mm-hmm. leave that open a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. oh, because you don't play small ball the way I play, you want to go for the home run, then you're a heretic.
Right.
And we throw that word around a lot.
That's too easily.
Right. So there is this difference. Like, we can play the game a little bit differently, have different philosophies on how to play the game. But as long as those rules still govern us, the creeds, mm-hmm. orthodoxy still governs us, we're all still playing the right game.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, because we have these different denominations and traditions within Christianity.
Right.
But what is it that binds us together? What is it that allows me to call a Lutheran or even a Baptist or an Anglican my brother in Christ?
Right, exactly.
There has to be a common confession about who Christ is and what he has done. We might have differences in our liturgical practices,
right.
and we might even have different opinions on some of the smaller things, mm-hmm. but there nevertheless is, on this creed, we have to be united.
Right.
I just the other day was watching a clip from Reza Aslan's CNN faith program, and he, in very enlightenment fashion, as if it's something new, has this sharp dichotomy between faith and religion. We all have faith. We all experience God. I mean, this is back to the whole we're all touching different parts of the elephant. So we all have these different experiences of God, but what we're experiencing is the same reality. Religion then messes all that up and comes in and objectivizes our different experiences into creeds and rituals and so forth. I mean, I think that makes total sense if you're wrong, Mike. If Paul's wrong, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead on the third day, right, it's basically your guess is as good as mine.
Right.
But if Jesus rose from the dead, he gets to tell me who God is.
Exactly.
And his relationship to him. And if my Mormon friends tell me that there are many gods, they're polytheists, and it is absolutely essential to the Christian creed that there is one God in three persons, then I have to say that Mormonism falls outside, on that point and many others, falls outside of the sphere of Christianity. It is a heresy. It is a Christian heresy. But that's just mean, unless there actually is and objectivity grounded in facts here.
Yeah, you've just boiled it down to opinion again, like we were saying.
Then you're mean.
Yeah, and you're saying you should like what I like.
Yeah.
You should enjoy it. You should be a fan of my favorite team or like the hamburger I like or my favorite color. And that's what I think comes across to our culture very often. And mm-hmm. it's where I think having the creeds and the confessions, it really helps us to disarm people. You can even speak about Christianity in the third person if you're talking to a non-believer, rather than putting it all in the first person. Well, Christianity says this. Well, Christianity, it's something observable. And that's how the apostles presented the Christian message. They said that Jesus of Nazareth has been raised from the dead. We know where David's tomb is. This one over here is empty. And hey, look at all of these psalms that he fulfilled. Look at all these prophets that said things that he fulfilled. You can look at it for yourself. Mm-hmm. But they're presenting it as something observable, something mm-hmm. measurable. Yeah. And I think we need to get back to that in our day and age.
Yeah, and heresy and orthodoxy are really binary, off and on switch. This isn't like a dimmer light. I think sometimes when we think of – especially if we come to know people, we get kind of sentimental when we come to know people, and that's understandable. If we don't grieve over friends especially and wrestle with the fact that friends who say they're Christians but don't affirm the Orthodox creedal faith, if we don't feel sad about that, then there's something wrong with us. But at the end of the day, it's not as if – well, you know, at least we have the same morality or we vote in really similar ways. No, that what decides what heresy is whether they confess this Trinitarian faith. You know, if a Jehovah's Witness friend thinks that Jesus is the highest creature, no, there is a qualitative distinction between God and not God. Qualitative chasm between God and not God. We're confessing that he's on the God side of that divide, not the creature side, however high and exalted. Well, he either is or he isn't. The Arian or Jehovah's Witness is right, or the Christian faith
right.
is right. But both can't be correct.
Yeah, last year I got into a long discussion with a friend of mine who was a Mormon. We became friends. And he was baffled by the fact that I would confront him and say, we're really different. We really don't believe the same thing. He was sort of bothered by the fact that I wouldn't accept him as a Christian. Mm-hmm. And in his mind, the essence of what it meant to be a Christian was to be a good person, mm-hmm. to love people. And he said, well, we do that too. We believe in Jesus too. But then when you bring up things like the creed and you ask, mm-hmm. well, who is Jesus? Going back to, you know, what we've been talking about throughout this series, you know, no creed but Christ, asking that question, who is Jesus? And then looking mm-hmm. at the creed and saying, well, he's the unbegotten Son of God, eternal, God of God, light of light.
Nope.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously you believe in a Jesus that's different than you might say mm-hmm. I believe in Jesus. And Paul talks about this in 2 Corinthians, yep. right? He's worried that the Corinthians might even receive another Jesus.
If someone comes to you preaching another Jesus or another spirit, right. you yes. put up with it easily yeah. enough.
And, yep. and in Galatians, it's another gospel, mm-hmm. which isn't a gospel. Heresy strikes at the vitals of what it means to be a Christian, of those things that are outlined in the creed, whether it's with regard to our doctrine of Christ, our doctrine of God, or our doctrine of salvation.
The creeds actually keep us from inventing schismatic and narrow-minded and bigoted forms of excommunicating other Christians.
Right.
Basically, churches came together and have come together for centuries now to say this is the house, and outside of this house there is no salvation, but within this house there are many mansions. And that is wonderfully freeing. It is liberating. It liberates not only parishioners from their pastors and their idiosyncrasies, but denominations from their own particular emphases that they might be inclined to hold over against other Christians and say, look, these are the things that make us Christians. These are the rules of the game. This is what makes baseball baseball. And then to have differences on other issues that we don't think are unimportant. Mm-hmm. They are important ways of playing baseball, and we think we could play baseball better. this way. But the game is defined by the rules of the game. And that's what the creed here gives us, very simple rules.
And if we approach it like that, doesn't it open the door for real discussions with one another and being able to talk charitably and listen to what the other person is trying to say instead of just ruling them out and saying you're a heretic or you're a Baptist or whatever.
Exactly. There's a great line, and I'll close with this, from John Owen, the great Puritan divine, who said, "What a merciful and gracious God we have, that he does not grade us on our knowledge any more than he does on the accuracy of our lives." That the gospel is big enough even to save people who get the facts wrong. Mm. We'll look forward to being with you again next time on The White Horse Inn.
The White Horse Inn is a listener-supported broadcast. For more information about this program, visit us online at whitehorseinn.org. If you sign up as an innkeeper, architect, or reformer, not only will you get a complimentary subscription to our magazine, Modern Reformation, but you'll also get longer editions of every White Horse Inn broadcast. To find out how to join one of these support programs, click on the support tab of our website, whitehorseinn.org. You can also give us a call at 1-800-890-7556. That's 1-800-890-7556. We'll see you next time at the White Horse Inn.